It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 107 of Sports Day Plus. At 6:30, I'm spending a couple more segments talking parenting with comedian and new dad Eric Griffin, who headlined at the Comedy Mothership over the weekend. At 6:15, Kyle Yeomans of DallasCowboys.com joins me to discuss Jerry Jones' team's draft and bringing Zeke back into the fold in that running back room. And in mere seconds, it was quite a weekend for Texas Longhorn NFL draft hopefuls. I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave. And do the same for ESPN Austin at 102.7 ESPN. Well, congratulations to the 11 Longhorns who heard their names called during the 2024 NFL Draft. It started last Thursday, went through Saturday, and these were the 11 guys that the NFL thought might have a chance at getting drafted. It was 11 guys who got invites to the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis in late February, early March. And sure enough, all 11 of those guys end up getting selected. A number only topped by your national champ Michigan Wolverines in this year's draft. Certain guys were expected. Guys that we actually talked about on Friday, that I talked about, I should say, with Kevin Dunn. That being first round picks Byron Murphy, who goes to Seattle, and then Xavier Worthy, who the Chiefs moved up for to snag at 28, taking the place of a Buffalo Bills team who clearly had a need at wide receiver, which they ended up selecting with the first pick of the second round on day two, getting Keon Coleman out of Florida State. What a character that guy seems to be. Those are the knowns. And even though he slid, a guy like A.D. Mitchell, also a known. Great pick for the Indianapolis Colts, and kudos to Chris Ballard for really stepping up and defending A.D. Mitchell and calling out this BS anonymous report about A.D. Mitchell, even though folks who cover this team here in Austin heard no such thing about him being a diva or having serious blood sugar issues throughout the course of his 1 year in Austin. But that's sadly how these things go sometimes. But good for Ballard for stepping up and defending his guy. Colts had a great weekend draft-wise, by the way. Jonathan Brooks ends up going before the Cowboys have a chance to take him with their second-round pick to the Carolina Panthers, who actually selected a couple of different Longhorns. Their other Longhorn selection was Jatavion Sanders, who they took with the very first pick on day three, start of the fourth round. Bummed for JT that he slides to the fourth round, but my opinion, he's got a long NFL career ahead of him, so make the most of it. JT Sanders. Devondre Sweat may be the biggest surprise in terms of where he went. I had conversations with people last week. I talked about it myself. About how Devondre Sweat, between he and JT Sanders as to who hurt their draft stock the most since the college football season ended. And it may not have been consensus, but it was close with people saying, yeah, Devondre Sweat. Combine and pro day stuff was a little bit up and down, but you also had the off-field issue that clearly didn't scare at least one team away from him. As the Tennessee Titans snagged Devondre Sweat pretty early in round two, the sixth pick in round two. He actually goes before A.D. Mitchell when it's all said and done. And Jonathan Brooks, too. A.D. Mitchell ends up being the fifth Longhorn drafted. I never would have guessed that. You might have been able to convince me that he could have been the fourth Longhorn drafted, but considering that most mock drafts had three Longhorns going in the first round, for A.D. Mitchell to have fallen to the 20th pick of the second round. Yeah. To echo what Ballard said, shame on that anonymous source. You put your name in your face to something like that versus just ruining a guy's credibility with one stupid anonymous tweet. The Longhorns end up not having anybody selected in the third round. But then day three hits, and it's a cascade of guys over the course of the fourth, fifth, and also the sixth rounds. Big time value pick, by the way, for the Arizona Cardinals in the fifth round, getting Christian Jones, who I fully expect to be a long time starter in the NFL. And then how about Keelan Robinson also going in round five, getting selected by the Jacksonville Jaguars? Yeah, you don't think that was influenced by the fact that the NFL has modified their kickoff rules to encourage kickoffs once again? Keelan Robinson has a future in this league as a special teams guy, if nothing else. But I think he's got some juice as a running back, too, as a gadget guy out of the backfield, a third down running back. And then round six, we see a couple more guys go. You get... No, excuse me. I missed somebody else in round five, too, by the way. My apologies. But Jalen Ford ends up going at the end of the fifth round to the New Orleans Saints. Love that for Jalen Ford. For a Saints team that was pretty salty defensively last year, Jalen Ford is going to be a great locker room presence and a steadying influence on that side of the ball. And then you get to round six. Ryan Watts goes to the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's a bit of a project right now considering the position switch, but I like the idea of him learning behind a guy like a Minkah Fitzpatrick. And then is there any better team for Jordan Whittington to end up on than the LA Rams, which is where he goes with the 37th pick of the sixth round? There were a bunch of supplemental picks that round. Love that. For a team and a coach with Sean McVay who finds immense value in receivers who have maybe been overlooked by everybody else. Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp, Jordan Whittington, another guy who has a ton of physical capabilities but also does the little things really well. So I can't wait to see what comes of Jordan Whittington out in L.A. So that was it. No seventh round picks. That wasn't expected. There were a couple of guys signed to NFL rosters who will get to take part in offseason workouts and hopefully still be around for training camp as well. But these 11 guys are a great symbol of what is currently happening on the 40 acres with that football program right now. Thanks to Steve Sarkisian, his assistant coaches, and the rest of the staff who have done a great job of identifying guys, many of whom are coming out of high school, some of whom are in the transfer portal, and developing those guys and turning them into extremely productive collegiates with a ton of pro prospects. That thought, that idea bore out over this last weekend as you saw more Longhorns drafted than at any other point in this program's history in a single NFL draft with 11. It's hard for me to be optimistic about this Texas Longhorns program, especially with the twists and turns since that 2010 season. Really, it started at the end of the 2009 season with Colt McCoy suffering that shoulder injury. But it does finally feel like things are heading in a really positive direction. At the perfect time, too, by the way. Because you don't want to still having to be getting your stuff together as SEC play commences, which it does for Texas and Oklahoma this coming season. Actually, you could argue that Oklahoma is still trying to get its affairs in order with Brent Venables heading into their first year of SEC play. That does not seem like it's a problem for Texas Longhorn football right now. It's a great thing. Congratulations to all those guys. Heck, congratulations to everybody who was drafted over the weekend. What a cool thing to get to see play out. These guys reaching that goal, that dream of playing in the NFL. All right, coming up, we're going to talk about the Dallas Cowboys draft with Kyle Yeomans of DallasCowboys.com right here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Kyle Yeomans is a TV and radio host for DallasCowboys.com. You heard him on this show last week previewing what the Dallas Cowboys were going to do in the draft, so I thought it would be a good idea to get him back on now that we know all of the Cowboys' picks and what they did over the course of 3 days. Kyle, thank you as always for the time. How you doing today?
Yeah, doing good. Holding on to my my 9-week-old son, Leo. He's sitting in my lap, so if he makes any noise, just take it as his radio debut, and we'll just go from there. But everything else has been good, and it's been a great week getting to dissect exactly what the Cowboys' plan is.
Let's not bury the lead here, Kyle. How are you guys sleeping? Maybe more importantly, how is Leo sleeping 9 weeks in?
Yeah, he's great. And then we've got two more. We just had newborn triplets in February. So we had the spontaneous triplets, my wife and I, Lorena. We've got two home. And we've got one still in the NICU. So she's up there right now visiting with Mikey, who's still there. And then I've got my little girl and my little boy, Noel, and Leo home. And, yeah, sleeping is relative these days. It's a term that I feel like is just gone with the wind, especially whenever you factor in draft prep. But all is good in the Yeoman's household, and we've been having a lot of fun.
Wow. Congratulations to you both on that feat, and best of luck with things going forward. All right, let's talk a little Dallas Cowboys, because we figured that they would go offensive line heavy in this year's draft and would also address some things on the defensive side of the ball. They certainly did the former, spending their first round pick, which they moved back for to get a guy that we talked about on Thursday in Oklahoma offensive tackle Tyler Guyton. Also get Cooper Beebe as well. But savvy the Cowboys to move back in the draft like that, get some additional capital, and also get a guy that seems like they've been targeting for a little while now in the tackle out of Norman, Oklahoma.
Yeah, I really did like the move quite a bit. He ended up being a trade back target like we had talked about on Thursday, but it happened out of order than what I thought. I thought initially if a guy like Troy Fatanu would fall, and he ended up falling all the way down to the 20s before he was taken by Pittsburgh. So if Fatanu would have fallen, I think he would have been the pick. And then I said Graham Barton would probably be the pick if Fatanu was gone. Then they would get on the phone and they would talk trade back scenarios before taking Tyler Guyton as either a trade back target or at that 24th spot. And that was really their plan. And even in the war room conversations and what we've heard to this point, of it was a decision to be made at 24. Graham Barton ended up falling. Did they want to continue beefing up their offensive line or trying to add in the draft? And they ultimately got an offer they couldn't refuse. I mean, Detroit overpaid compared to some of the trade value charts that you can use. They used a third-round pick, an early third-round pick, to jump up and make the selection at 24. So I think Dallas was plenty settled in on grabbing Graham Barton until Detroit kind of blew them out of the water with that early third round pick that ultimately ended up being Cooper Beebe. So not only did you get Tyler Guyton, that beefs up the outside of your offensive line, but really with the same pick, you get Cooper Beebe, who could be your starting center as a rookie. So it was a savvy move. It was one that I think gave them flexibility for the rest of the draft to go and draft for best player available, at least on their board, and not necessarily pigeonhole themselves into taking a need at those specific spots. So it really interested, it provided for an interesting way to attack the draft whenever they ultimately did move back.
I don't know about you, but I knew very little about Marshawn Neyland when the Cowboys selected him in the second round. So what can you tell myself and anybody else listening right now about the edge rusher out of Western Michigan?
Yeah, I really liked Marshawn Neyland's tape, and he, of course, was playing against Mountain West competition. It's not like he was playing SEC-level ball against those offensive linemen. But in the Mountain West, he was doing a nice job of controlling the line of scrimmage and setting the edge. And he really showed out in Senior Bowl week. That was really the first time I took note of Neyland and said, wow, this guy's got some ability to get off the line of scrimmage. He has some good explosion. Not the most flexible guy that you're going to see off the line of scrimmage, and he's not going to just finesse anybody. He's more of a power rusher, which bodes well for the Cowboys because it's different than what they have, right? They have Sam Williams, who's finesse. They have Micah Parsons, who's speed. And then you've got DeMarcus Lawrence, who's, of course, on the backside of his career. But I think Nealon compares best to a D-Law mindset of he's going to get in the backfield, he's going to set the edge, and he's not afraid to chase down and finish a play as well. So high motor, high explosion off the line of scrimmage. And I thought with the 56th pick, they would go with a linebacker or they would go with a running back. And they certainly had some options available. I know Trey Benson was on the board at 56. But when Jonathan Brooks was gone, which I think was their target at that spot, and he was drafted so early in that second round, it provided them an opportunity to say, okay, let's not pigeonhole into a need. Let's not stretch on a position like we may have done last year in the draft and maybe some self-scouting in that regard. And instead of pulling a Luke Schoonmaker pick where they have to draft a tight end, they took the best player on their board.
Was that made a little bit easier for them based on the fact that they had the framework in place with Ezekiel Elliott, a guy that they were clearly planning on signing once the draft was over with, which I think officially happened a couple of hours ago?
Yeah, I think it certainly provided a safety net, right? It gave an opportunity for the conversation to be had in the war room to say, hey, if we don't want to stretch on a running back here, we have Zeke in our back pocket. And that's, I think that played a factor because you and I sitting there on Thursday talking about the potential picks and the potential positions that were addressed, I don't think you and I both could have anticipated a weekend without a running back or an entire draft without a running back, especially when you add an extra pick from that first round selection. So I think it was a surprise to most, but not a surprise in the war room. They knew they had Ezekiel Elliott interested in coming back in a framework of a deal, like you said, that's becoming official today. But there's a lot that can happen and a lot to unfold, I think, still in that running back room between now and the end of training camp, because they're going to have to see somebody emerge as that lead back. And whether that's Zeke or Royce Freeman or Malik Davis or Deuce Vaughn, open competition in the backfield, and they're going to have to run the ball effectively if they want this offense to work like it has in the past.
How legit do you think the competition is coming from Deuce Vaughn, and what do you ultimately think that Ezekiel Elliott's role will be with this team in 2024?
Well, I think Zeke brings a veteran mindset, first off, and a locker room presence. He was beloved by everybody, really, in the organization. I'm not even going to limit it to the locker room. He was a great piece to that locker room and to have around. So having him back in the fold, I think, will provide a jolt to the players in the locker room itself. But he does bring some short yardage ability that you lost when he did leave the first time. And you tried to find that last year with guys like, of course, Tony Pollard got a first opportunity, and that didn't work out well. Hunter Lipke had a couple chances, and I think that was working for a split second before he fumbled at the goal line late in the season. That I think put a red flag on his mind. But I think it's a role of interchangeability right now, because you have some playmaking ability with Davis and Vaughn, and then you've got the short yardage and receiving ability, pass protection ability from guys like Freeman and Ezekiel Elliott. So it's a mix and a match right now, but I want to see more from all four of those guys before you really pigeonhole themselves into a potential role and put them into a spot, because I think training camp is going to tell a lot about what that running back room holds.
Cowboys did end up going linebacker as one of their two third-round picks, Cooper Beebe the other one, but they go to Notre Dame to find a linebacker in Marist Liufau, is how Liufau. I'm guessing that last name is pronounced. What do you like about Liufau?
Oh, I like his downhill ability. He's a good blitzer off the second level, and he's a heat-seeking missile. He loves the physicality of the game, and he plays, they like to say it in the scouting world, he plays with his hair on fire. And I talked about the high motor. I think that was a theme with some of these defensive picks. And Marshawn Nealon, high motor. Liufau has a high motor. At the end of the draft, Rodgers has a high motor as a defensive tackle out of Auburn. They're drafting guys that Mike Zimmer can rely on to bring energy and effort at the second level. And he's different in the fact that he can be a true Mike linebacker, but he may fit well as the Will. And so it's a different skill set than what DeMarvian Overshown brings. It's a different skill set from what Damone Clark brings, and certainly different than what Leighton Vander Esch has. But I think Cowboys fans should be happy in the fact that he brings a downhill ability, but he's also brings a clean bill of health too. He didn't really struggle with a ton of injuries during his time at Notre Dame. And I feel like that's been a linebacker room that's been plagued with health issues really since the selection of Sean Lee and Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch, Damone Clark. I mean, you name it, they've had some injuries at the second level, and hopefully he can stay healthy moving forward. But that's a linebacker spot that needed some bodies, and he's one that brings not only a body but some energy as well.
All right, last question now, Kyle. I have about 30 seconds here. Now that we're through the draft, free agency is mostly over. What do you think the biggest question is for this Cowboys team heading into next season?
I think the biggest question is how comfortable are you at running back? And we just talked about it extensively, so I won't go too far into it. But do you need a dynamic playmaker? Because there are some that are still out on the open market. But can you find that in guys like Malik Davis, in Ezekiel Elliott, in Deuce Vaughn? Because if you can't find that, you might want to get on the phone and even add another name to that mix and see how that can try and spice up some competition at the running back spot.
We shall see. And a guy who does as good a job as anybody in covering this football team is joining me right now for this segment. It is Kyle Yeomans. Check out his work at DallasCowboys.com. Kyle, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for the time. Best of luck with those newborns.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. I'm going to need it. Thanks for having me, and we'll talk soon.
Coming up, it's a continuation of my conversation from Friday with comedian Eric Griffin, who headlined at the comedy Mothership over the weekend. We're talking about parenting over the next couple of segments here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Eric Griffin is a longtime comedian, actor, and podcaster. As a podcaster, you can hear him on his weekly podcast, Griffin with Griffin. As an actor, he's been in everything from Murder Mystery to I'm Dying Up Here to playing Montez in Workaholics. And as a comedian, he was in town this last weekend performing at the Comedy Mothership. On Friday, we talked about football and comedy, but Eric is also a new dad. Apologies for burying the lead on Friday, Eric, but you are a new dad. Your son is just a couple of months old now. Looks great based on the pictures that I see on social media from you and your wife. And my goodness, does he seem like a pretty big kid for his age as well. But just how great is fatherhood?
He's off the charts, according to the doctor. The doctor said he's off the charts. That, you know, for tall, like, you know, they do the measurements, and you know, you look at the what do you call it? They have these curves,
length, like, and
this
weight.
Is the average.
Yeah.
So they have the averages, and you know, and so his height was way above the average. So I was like, but she's almost 6 foot. I'm 6'3". Her dad's like almost 7 foot. You know, her brother's 6'5", or, you know what I mean? So hopefully I'm going to be one of those. I'm going to be doing this. Defense! Defense!
His name is Wilford, is that right?
Wolford, like Wolf.
Wolford, okay. Wolford. And how old is he now?
He's 12 weeks today.
Oh, wow. So we're nearing the 3-month mark.
Yeah, he's smiling, you know, it's great.
Yeah, I mean, look at that adorable smile right there.
I know, even like these little smirks he does, it's like, it's crazy that he does that. Like, we had this one picture on my social media that it's like, it's on my phone now. I keep it as my thing. It's like, we're like head to head with him. And he had this look on his face that I was like, and we both were like so shocked, like, look at him. He's like he knew the camera was there. So it's like, it's great. These are great times, but you know, it's about to get tougher, I know. You know, when they start moving more, like right now, I could leave them on the changing table and like go wash my hands. You know what I mean? Now it's like, you know, it's going to get to a point where it's going to be like, how did he find the detergent? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Cover the light sockets now, because otherwise that turns into a little crease. It is very intriguing for little fingers to try and stick themselves in. So what has been the biggest thing that you've learned through the first 3 months of fatherhood, Eric?
Oh man, I guess it's like, this is a strange thing, but you know, I've been working out. Like I work out like 3 times a week now, mm-hmm. you know, and I've been trying to get healthier. I'm trying to eat healthier. I already feel stronger. I already feel like I have my heart health is better because of that. But you know, the weight loss is about your food. So I got to, you know, meals. But anyway, my point is, when you're like, get to a certain age, you just kind of go, oh, you know what? This is me. This is who I am. I'm just going to like live. I'm going to ride this out, you know? And you don't, you know, and you think about that, you're like, well, I'm not really caring about myself. Right. But, the other way is like, yeah, just living my life. You know what I mean? But when someone else comes into your life, a baby, and you start to think about what you need to do for them, it becomes a thing where, oh, you know what? I have to take care of myself for this person. And it's a weird thing. Cause I wasn't taking care of myself for me. You know what I mean? So now I'm like, oh no, I got to do this. So now I'm like, I feel more focused. I feel more like, you know, I'm trying to work more and like, you know, save money, buy a house, do all these things that I thought before was just kind of like, we're fine. You know, like we live in this townhouse, we're renting, it's fine. We love it. But then it's like, oh, we want a yard. We want a dog. We want to, you know, you start just thinking about the future and like, you know, wanting to survive, especially being an older dad too. You know what I mean? It is what it is. You know, I couldn't, you know, what am I supposed to do? You know, but I always ask the question, like, would you rather be 30 struggling for money with a kid or be older and be established and now you can do whatever you want? You know, it's, I guess the real answer would be you want to be 25 and rich, right?
Yeah. With the energy to deal with kids also.
With the energy to deal with kids. So it's like, that's another thing too, is like having the energy and like the strength and like, you know. My trainer's great. He's like, all right, you have to like, I'm doing all these exercises where he's like, pick this off the ground because that's what you're going to have to do. You know what I mean? So I'm doing a lot of squats and lifting up with weights. And he's really great about like, he's like, he's got 3 kids and he's this older dude. So he's like, this is how you do it, you know?
Oh,
so,
I love how he's going with functional training for you, but not for any particular sport, but specifically to fatherhood. Yeah, that's a really good trainer, I'm going for
the fatherhood baby Olympics. I'm training for that right now. So it's like, it's pretty great, man. It's quite an experience.
You're so right about fatherhood shifting your perspective on life and death, because even though I was in decent shape when I had each of my 2 kids, they're 9 and 7 now, by the way, this is them at a much younger age. So 9 and 7, they're starting to become these more independent little humans, and it's incredible. And they can talk back to you. So there's some points of frustration that aren't there at 3 months necessarily, I was never somebody who was afraid of death, but every time I get on a plane now, as soon as the plane starts to take off, I find myself anxious and worried for those handful of seconds that something bad is about to happen in this moment. And if something bad happens in this moment, that's it for us. We're done. And then my kids will have to grow up without a dad. Then I have to think that the ability to fly in airplanes is one of humans' greatest inventions and innovations, and that calms me down. But there are moments like that where I'm worried, and it's not necessarily for myself, but it's for my kids. And I think that speaks to you wanting to make sure that you're there for your son and any future offspring for as long as humanly possible, you know?
Yeah, what you're speaking on is... and this is something that like this emotion is always there now, and it's fear, you know, it's like, it's just always there for like, you never thought about these kinds of things, or just like, ooh, you know, it's like, or you'll be outside and I'll be like, but where's the stop sign on this? supposed to be a stop sign on this street right here. Where are the speed bumps? Like, you know, I find myself thinking about things I never thought about before, or like, you know, just like I'm a million mile flyer on United. You know, I've been flying forever, but I know exactly what you mean. That plane's a little bit of turbulence. I'm like, oh my God, do I have my will together? You know what I mean? I got to get a living trust. You know, you feel like I'm going to be on the phone, like, you know, whoever finds this, leave all my money to, you know what I mean? So it's like, but you know what I was thinking about though, like to move away from the morbid of it, but this could probably be even more morbid, is because of AI, what can you even believe anymore?
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? Like you can make, like somebody can make an AI video, like a last will and testament of just pick a person. And then, like, you know, how do you know that? How can you now verify that that is the person?
We are in scary times. There was already information.
That's scary, man, right?
We were already in information overload, and now it's even more difficult to decipher what's real and what's fake.
Right.
And there's no good answers because, unfortunately, the people most responsible for developing these things haven't put the guardrails or safeguards in place. So it is truly a free-for-all, unfortunately.
Yeah, but this is the kind of thing that's like, you know, how people use it is the thing. Like, you know, you don't want to stop innovation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you don't stop innovation, but then you let innovation go wild. And that's like, we're dropping, you know, bombs on countries. You know what I'm saying? Like that's the, you know what I mean?
Well, just with recent conflicts, we've seen examples of people getting fooled about war footage or what they thought was war footage that actually came from a video game. But it's being sold as something and it looks enough like something that you just run with it versus doing what journalists are supposed to do, which is to check it with a couple of different sources. With social media, that luxury doesn't exist because we're all so dead set on being the first one to respond to something or pile on whatever trend has started on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, whatever.
Yeah, but see, what was the start of this? You know, I often think about this. It's like, you know, it's like, it's not information overload that I think is the problem. It's verification of that information that's the problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, up to this point, like, I don't know how old you are. How old are you?
46. I'm just five, six years younger than you.
Yeah. So, all right. So you still remember an era where like it was only three news programs and like we got all our information there and we really respected the news. Come to find out that they're full of it too. They always were. Yeah. Like when you look back at like what Dan Rather was doing, like writing letters, you know what I mean? Like, so what we realize is like misinformation has been going on for a long time. Now there's just much more of it. You know, it's like, you know, and then you got people riding their political spectrums, you know, like, you know, you got we think everything is on this prism of right and left. And it's like, we're the ones that need to be like, oh, wait, hold on a second. We should probably be like, well, what is my side saying? Is this right? Like, instead, forget about what the other side is saying. Like, you know, if you're a conservative, you shouldn't be like, what a liberals. No, you should be like, let's make sure our side is in order. But we don't do that.
You figure out very quickly as a dad that you are very worthless early on in the process. You get to do the easiest and most fun thing to initiate it all, let's say. And you can be there to support her. But ultimately, your presence is not all that necessary. It's why we had our first kid, I was like, all right, my goal right now is to give you whatever breaks I can to allow you a little bit more sleep or a little bit of rest, not have to worry about a little squirming being right next to you. But ultimately, we are a pathetic part of this whole process through, I'd say, the first, I don't know, year and a half or so.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's so funny, too, though. Like yesterday, I was out and about. And so my wife wanted to get an IV, you know, she wanted to get one of those like, you know, foo-foo IVs. And so I had the baby in the carrier and I'm just, while she's there, I'm walking around. And let me tell you something. When a dad is walking around with a baby by himself, you're father of the year. It's like, you don't got to do much, man. If you're pushing a stroller, people are like, oh my God, what a great father. And my wife is always like, she's just like, oh my God, I was up all night. You carry him for 30 minutes and you're father of the year.
It's a low bar that our predecessors have set for us, apparently. He is comedian Eric Griffin, was in town for headlining shows at the Comedy Mothership this past weekend. Coming up, one more segment with Eric here on the other side on Sports Day Plus on 102.7 ESPN and 102.7ESPN.com.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back for one more segment with comedian, actor, and podcaster Eric Griffin. You know him best, most likely, as his role as Montez in Workaholics, and he was here in Austin headlining at the Comedy Mothership over the weekend. And we're spending these two segments, last segment and this segment, talking parenting, because Eric is a new dad. His first son is just a couple of months old. And Eric, we as dads have it easy. We have the easiest part of the gig in the very beginning. of the procreation, let's just say. And then we're pretty worthless after that until, I don't know, the 6 to 9 month mark.
It really is. But the thing, too, though, is like my wife always gets mad, too. She's like fake mad. But like, you know, he recognizes me, I feel like, because he gets excited, you know. Like, he has a thing where I'm like, hey, babe, you know, I get with him and he's just like, nah, you know what I mean? And she's like, oh, my God, he totally knows you're here. I'm with him all day. I'm with him all day. But it's like, you know, I saw a great quote, though. It's like, however uncomfortable we are, all the discomfort we feel in is their comfort. We have to remember that.
Mm, that's a great quote.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, when she can't sleep right because he's right there and, you know, whatever the thing is, it's like all that discomfort is like, it's his world, you know, like imagine the comfort he must feel of like, you know, mom's boob is just right there, you know what I mean? It's just at any time, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's just like, so I try to remember that too. I try to give her breaks too. Like this morning, even before you hit me up, you know, it's like if I wake up and it's like, you know, 6:30, I look over and, you know, she sleeps a certain way and he's right there. He starts to get a little fussy. So I'll grab him,
yeah,
put him on my chest, let him sleep for as long as I can let him sleep, or I'll take him downstairs and then I let her just do her thing, you know. And it's funny what you were saying earlier about like how our country sucks. I totally agree with you, man. Like they just changed the laws in California, actually, about this, because. So my wife was working, you know, she wanted to. I mean, she was working because she wanted to.
Yeah.
And, you know, she became the visual merchandiser of a store. That's what she wanted. That was the goal she wanted to be. I want to be a visual merchandiser. All right. So she did it. Right. But then when it came time to like have the baby, it was like, all right. And I told her, I said, because my mom always wanted to be a stay-at-home mom, you know. And so I always knew that when the time came, I would give that option to my partner, my wife, or whoever it is, you know. And so, you know, so she didn't go back to work. But there was the time that the 3 weeks passed or the 6 weeks, whatever it was, and it was time for her to go back to work if she was going to go back to work. And we were looking at each other like, how do people do this? I don't, you know, it's like my wife's breastfeeding. So like people got to pump at work, put the milk in the refrigerator if they have one at work. Like, I just thought, oh, this is a nightmare. And then I thought, my God, how do single moms do this? Like, how are single moms doing this where they have to go back to work? It's like, it's bananas to me. So I look at my situation and I'm like, oh, how great. Like I didn't do anything for over a month and a half. I was just here with her, you know? And then I've had to, and then even the job that I do, I, you know, I leave out of town, I come back, but there's like times where like I'm just home,
yeah.
You know? So it's like, man, I feel blessed that I could be in this situation. But just kudos, shout out to all the moms out there who don't have it like that. And you know, you're doing God's work, and keep it up, keep fighting. And you know, your kid will appreciate you later, even if you don't feel it now. And I know how hard it is, but keep your head up, and keep striving for it, because you're doing something beautiful. And you know, and those dads out there, like, you know, remember, stay in it, you know, do whatever you can to help alleviate, just give her some rest, you know, even if it's just a baby mama situation, she needs some rest, you know, because that's going to be better for your kid. I mean, it's just all these things, man. I have a whole new perspective on life because of this child, you know what I mean?
Yeah. We look at things so backwards here in a lot of ways. And look, America is the land of opportunity. That's not a cliche. It is truly the case that there is so much opportunity here. But with that comes a weird sort of glorification of working 60 to 80 hour weeks, which any sane person that does that, that needs the normal 7 to 9 to sometimes 10 hours of sleep, they're going to burn themselves out really quickly. But to take that time off, or to cater to a newborn or a new family, or to make an extra effort and maybe neglect work for a little bit, or just take that flat out break, is looked down upon weirdly. The tide has started to turn though, thankfully, but we're still not all the way there yet, like a lot of other countries around the world are.
Yeah, I know, but like again, California has some dumb laws here, some stupid stuff going on.
Oh, what was the law that they changed? You started to mention that. I don't think you detailed
it. I should look it up real quick to get it completely right, but women who are now pregnant they can't be forced out of their job now. You know? Cuz that happens. They can't be let go because they're pregnant, you know? And if they have to take off time, they could take off time. My wife literally took off her whole pregnancy because she was super sick at first, you know? And if you have a job where you have to do stuff, you know, and you can't do it, it's not fair that they just go, well, we're sorry, you know? And so they change. But again, I mean, there's two sides. Imagine you're an employer and you're like, my worker's not here. What am I supposed to do? So it's like, I get that. But at the same time, it's like, I'm on the other side where I'm just like, you know, we're in a situation where, you know, it is what it is. So it's like, you know, we have a weird thing here in our country. You know, they're talking about 4-day work weeks and look, we're always chasing that carrot, man. You know, the land of opportunity means you have to go for the opportunities.
Got to grind.
So the opportunity. Yeah. You know what I mean? So the opportunities are there. So you have to grind for them, you know? So, you know, you make sacrifices, but you know,
well, it gets back to your point about having a kid a little bit later on where you've already been able to put the effort into pursuing that dream. And if you've established yourself to a certain degree where that sort of thing becomes easier if you're not going to be compensated necessarily.
Yes, for sure. I do feel that. I do feel like whatever choices I'm making now are because I want to do them.
Yeah.
And so now I can have a conversation with my wife and we can figure it out. Or now I'm in a situation where, you know, look, if I book some sitcom and I have to move to Atlanta for 6 months, it's like, all right, well, my family's coming with me. I could do that. You know, if I have to go to do a movie or something and I'm gone for 4 weeks, whatever, like it's like, all right, babe, you want to come to this thing with me? Let's bring the baby. I mean, you know, these are all the kind of choices you can make later in life, whatever, when you're like, you know, in the business that I'm in, I'm saying. But for other people, it could be something, you know, something, whatever your choice is, could be your choice. But it's like, you know, I just think you have to like be present because I never had a dad. So like everything I'm doing now with my kid, I never experienced. So
yeah.
I just think about that too, of just being like, all right, I want to be present. And then I hear other comics who were like, had kids and then they were like, oh, he's gone. And like, oh, I missed birthdays and all that kind of stuff. So now I look at myself now and I go, well, that'll just be a choice. So now it's like, I look at my calendar and I'm like, all right, this is blocked off now. I have to just, I can just do that if I want to. You know, it's just all the kinds of things that not everybody's in that position, but we have to try our best.
Yeah, my upbringing wasn't quite as extreme. My dad was around, but he was constantly chasing his vices. And fortunately, I had a really good, positive male role model in my grandfather to show me the right way to do things. But that's always in the back of my head with how I'm operating and the decisions that I make. And that's not to say that I'm perfect. I'm far from perfect. None of us are perfect. And as you mentioned, parenting is full of mistakes. And it's important for us to own those mistakes, especially to our kids when they're old enough to understand that you can still be their hero and also make mistakes. That actually humanizes you, and that's great for their long-term development as well. I think a person can go one of two ways if they have a bad parental influence in their lives. They can either become that or they can go in the opposite direction. And it sounds like you, like me, make a very concerted effort to go the opposite direction of what your paternal influence was growing up.
Yeah. Well, one of the ways that I want to affect how he looks at the world is how he looks at women. And so, and I think the way to do that is to show love, show affection, show respect to my wife, just in general, but especially when he's around. You know, it's something to be like, hey, this is, you know, I want him to see like, you know, this is how you treat your women in your life this certain way. You know what I mean? And I think about like, you know, where did I learn? I don't know if I did. You know what I mean? And so you just kind of go like, you think back to your experiences of like, especially like everything that is happening in the world, how people are very sensitive about things. And, you know, it's like, it's time. So it's like, oh, it starts now, you know? There's something about that. There's something about like, hey, I'm giving my wife a hug. I'm giving my wife a kiss. I'm saying nice things to my wife. Like, hey, babe, love you. You look beautiful today. And that's just such a small thing. But if he sees that all the time, then the next thing, when he's older and the women in his life I want him to be like that. Hey, you look beautiful today. You know, let me open that door for you. Let me do this. You know what I mean? Like whatever the thing is, whatever you consider gentlemanly or whatever, it's like, you know, it's like, he just go like, you know, don't hit women. And this is why you're stronger. And, you know, even if they, you know, show the differences, like, oh, I know you're going to want to take her head and put it into a garbage disposal because she, because you know what I mean? But you're just like, no, you don't do that. And this is why, you know, it's all those kinds. So it's like, sometimes what I'm saying is it's not big concepts that you want to, put forth into your kids' thinking. Sometimes it's just little small things about, you know, being nice to others, you know what I'm saying? Like it's sort of these little things that affect how people look at you that you don't even think about until it's until later, you know?
That's it for another edition of Sports Day Plus. Join me tomorrow as I'll be in conversation for the full hour with my bud Kevin Dunn, talking NFL draft and more. Until then, thank you so much for listening to today's show. Be back tomorrow at 6. Have yourselves a great rest of the evening and hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Ellis.